You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your co-host, Chad Dundas, a longtime MMA journalist, novelist, and podcaster. And joining me, as always, from MMA Junkie and USA Today, it's your friend and mine, Mr. Ben Folks. Ben, we are back in the thick of it now.
Can you feel it? Can you feel the thick of it wrapping itself around you?
You had the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix wrap up over the weekend, and UFC on ESPN Plus 2 is coming up on Saturday night. Plus, the weekend after that is UFC 234, featuring Robert Whittaker defending the middleweight title against Kelvin Gastelum. You know what? If I was Bobby Knuckles, I might take extreme caution when it comes to defending my title against this smaller man in Kelvin Gastelum, because the big fella has not had a lot of luck in recent meetings over the title in MMA.
That's true. When you look at the long-term trends, seems like it pays to be the smaller, quicker man out there, unless you happen to be Bobby fucking Knuckles. And then maybe you don't worry about it, Chad.
Well, there's that. There is that. Then February 17th, you got the UFC on ESPN1, the Octagon's official debut on the actual worldwide leader. And then February 23rd, UFC on ESPN Plus 3. I could tell you, Ben, that UFC 235 is the first weekend in March, but I don't want to overcomplicate your calendar.
Man, feels like there's a lot of living to do between now and then.
Did you think I was lying when I said we were in the thick of it? Because we are in the thick of it, friend.
We really are.
Suffice to say, a lot of stuff going on in the MMA world, and frankly, a good time to keep it locked right here at the CME Podcast.
Why would you do anything else?
Why would you do anything
else? Be foolish.
Remember, if you want to support the show, you can go out and get Cowboy Astronaut Knot cigarettes or Dundasso t-shirts whenever you want them over at cottonbureau.com. We've also got music this week from our guy, The Fifth Element, a music producer out of Fort Worth, Texas. If you like what you hear from him on the show, you can check out more over at The Fifth Element on Twitter, facebook.com/TheFifthElement, or soundcloud.com/TheFifthElementOfficial. And as you guys know by now, that's the word the with an A.
You know, when you say it like that, when you say you can get Cowboy Astronaut cigarettes or Dundasso t-shirts, it sounds like you're saying they could actually get Cowboy Astronaut cigarettes. Which, you know, now I just got a great idea.
That's the next step, right?
We should get in the tobacco business.
Yeah, we could get a small tobacco farm up and running.
Why not? Why not?
It seems like it would be within our means.
Sure. We don't know anything about agriculture or laws or sales, but I feel like, actually, I'm going to go ahead and say right now, we got a future as tobacco barons.
I can tell you this. One thing I do know, over the course of history, tobacco has been a relatively popular product.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Seems to have done good business for individuals over a period of time.
That's right. And I feel like I've always felt like living inside me somewhere as an evil rich guy. And what better way to unlock that potential than the tobacco business?
I know. At this point, you're just an evil middle-class schlub.
I know. That's no fun at all.
Three rounds as usual this week in the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, man, Ryan Bader knocked out Fedor Emelianenko so fast, I didn't even really have time to get depressed about it. So small victories, I guess. And in round number two, a final verdict on the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix and whether it'll go down as a towering home run hit off the bat of Scotty Coakes. And in round number three, in case you were wondering if the star-studded lineup of UFC on ESPN Plus One would be the norm, well, let us present to you UFC on ESPN Plus Two. All that plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff, but first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
All right, the first piece of listener mail this week comes to us from Matt Webb. Ben, he writes, "What the shit is Bellator doing with Aaron Pico? The kid is 22 and has had his whole shit broke twice in six fights. They put him against Zach Freeman in his debut, who was 8-2. Then they put him up against Henry fucking Corrales, who is 17-2. Why are they ruining Pico's career? What the fuck is Bellator doing? Antonio McKee and Michael Page were homegrown talent brought up perfect. Why are they fucking Pico's career up so bad? Discourse. Now, I will admit to you, Ben, that I was taken aback a little bit in the introductions to Pico versus Corrales when Mike Goldberg and Big John McCarthy were yucking it up about how everything was virtually identical, except for the records. Because we know when Bellator puts Aaron Pico into fights, it's not because they think the other guy is going to win.
Right.
And yet it was kind of eye-popping to see Aaron Pico's record alongside Henry Corrales' record, because I think they had Henry Corrales listed at 16-3.
Yeah.
And that made me think, like, this guy ain't no joke. And then, of course, you go out there, you get, you know, a minute and 7 seconds or whatever it was of kind of a crackerjack fight. And obviously, Aaron Pico was going to win right up to the moment that he lost.
Yeah, one of those.
So I feel like Aaron Pico is developing as kind of an interesting person, a person worthy of some discussion here. Obviously, he's a guy who's a blue chip talent, a guy everybody heard of coming out of AKA before he ever made his Bellator debut. He's lost twice now. But I would also say, I think that Matt Webb is right. Like, he's out there fighting some legitimately tough dudes for a guy who has, you know, such little experience as he does.
But what do we want Bellator to do instead? To just go purely tomato can shopping?
Yeah.
Because people won't like that either. It's like, it's a kind of a no-win situation there. If you put him up against somebody who is like 2-4, everybody's going, all right, so we're just going to have Aaron Pico go out here and body somebody to just build him up. If he goes out there against somebody who's more experienced and he loses, then it's what the shit is Bellator doing with Aaron Pico. I mean, right. I would prefer this than the other one, because I know what you're saying too. And I bet you there's a lot of people out there who, when they get the offer to fight Aaron Pico from Bellator, are thinking, it's not because Bellator thinks I'm going to win.
Yeah.
There might be getting tougher to matchmake for him if that's what you're trying to do. And there might be some people who out there turning down those offers these days. But you're right, like his last fight was, you know, against a similarly experienced guy, a guy who had a little over 20 fights and, you know, had just fought Darian Caldwell and then went right into the Aaron Pico fight. And then this one, like, yeah, he had somebody who, and Henry Corrales, like he'd been around in Bellator for a while. He has fought some the legit people that Bellator had for him to fight, like Daniel Strauss and Patricio Pitbull, and then went on like this winning streak going into this fight. I still think it was a winnable fight for Aaron Pico. I mean, he drops him with that uppercut early on.
Yeah.
I think what you're seeing with Aaron Pico is just that there's a lot of physical ability and a lot of the overall mental and strategy game isn't there yet, which maybe shouldn't surprise us for a 22-year-old fighter with just a handful of pro fights. I mean, for one thing, have we seen him wrestle in a fight yet? Have we seen him even threaten somebody with that?
I mean, not to my memory. I was actually going to say, you know, despite the fact that there have been some bumps in the road now that Aaron Pico is 4-2 overall as a professional, he hasn't been in a boring fight yet. Like, you can say what you want to about the guy, but like, he's not 6-0 like maybe we expected him to be coming out of the gate. But at the same time, like, if I see Aaron Pico is fighting on a Bellator card, I get kind of a good feeling about it. I'm like, oh, Aaron Pico, he's fun to watch. So like, even though he hasn't won all of these fights, like, he, to me, has established himself as a guy that I think is fun to watch. And that's, you know, not the worst place in the world to be if you're Aaron Pico.
Well, I saw Eddie Alvarez commenting on this fight on Twitter after watching it. And he was like, yeah, you know, he got a little excited after dropping the guy. And then he goes out there trying to finish him and just got a little carried away.
Yeah.
And that's how he got caught. And Eddie Alvarez being like, I used to be like that early on in my career, too. Some might argue Eddie Alvarez still has shades of being that way from time to time. But where you have to learn some of these rookie mistakes. The difference is most people get to learn it when nobody else is really watching.
Right.
Like nobody is paying that much attention to like a 4-1 fighter most of the time. And you're Aaron Pico, people have been paying attention since the jump. So you don't get a chance to grow up and make these mistakes without each time people trying to pass a final verdict on you. He's 22.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe there's still hope for the guy, I'm saying.
Yeah, it always presents such an interesting conundrum for matchmakers, I think, when you have a guy like this who's super talented and yet doesn't really have a ton of experience inside the cage. I remember when Amir Sadala won Tough.
Yeah.
Remember that? He won the Ultimate Fighter before he even made his professional debut.
Yeah, I think he was 0-0 as a pro when he went on the show.
It was kind of this deal where you were like, oh, that's cool, this guy won Tough. Well, now what? Now the UFC, which at the time and, you know, was still carrying on this sort of like gold standard for professional fighters, was sort of like, well, now who are they going to get this guy to fight? Like, the UFC matchmakers have to go out and find talent comparable to this guy who's 0-0. And obviously we've seen more cases like that come along since then, but Amir Siddall was really kind of unique in that way at the time. With Aaron Pico, and obviously you got a guy who's just brimming with talent here and natural ability, it must be the sort of the same thing for Bellator matchmakers. And I do understand what you were saying, in that it's sort of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Like, there's only two real ways to go with this guy. You could give him cans, or you could give him, you know, relatively experienced good fighters that you think he's going to be competitive with. And all is not lost, certainly, for Aaron Pico. He said he's going to take a little bit of time away from the cage after this knockout. But at the same time, like, I'm interested to see where the kid goes, and I will definitely watch his next fight.
Yeah, I would not mind seeing him get a little bit more defensive-minded in the future, and I'm sure that's something they'll talk about in the gym.
Here's the other side of the coin from Jay Gargiulo. He writes, can you guys talk a bit about Henry Corrales? I didn't know anything about him coming into that fight, but after the comeback knockout of Aaron Pico, I'm thinking he might be one of my guys. He quote-unquote celebrated by calmly walking around the cage and not even cracking a smile, and then said, quote, at my best, I've lived a mediocre life, and I'm ready to die on this motherfucker, in the post-fight interview. Are you tuning in to see him fight whichever Pitbull brother he called out? Also, the nickname, quote-unquote, OK Corrales, is kind of perfect for someone who classifies their life as mediocre to this point and comes out guns blazing. Works on multiple levels.
It really does. Yeah. And I admit I missed that at first. I admit that, like, I got the OK Corrales, and
hey. If that's the only level that this name is working
it's not
at,
terrible.
OK Corrales is still a good nickname.
Yeah, it is. I'm not always a fan of the pun nickname, the pun especially that works with your actual name. But this one, yeah, I like it. And then when you tell me OK Corrales, mediocre life, but also guns blazing, man, that's all the levels I could ever hope for a nickname to work on.
Yeah.
So I'm into it.
Yeah. This is obviously a big win for him over Aaron Pico. He's a guy that he moved over to the lab, right?
Yes.
And now credits that coaching change kind of with sort of revitalizing his career. I guess the situation for Bellator, you probably put Henry Corrales into this fight thinking that Aaron Pico was going to beat him. But it doesn't seem like the worst thing in the world to now have also Henry Corrales around as a guy who could become, or at least right now, is not a star for you, but some kind of minor promotable entity.
You got, a 5-fight winning streak going on in Bellator? That ain't too bad. And you're right that Bellator is not exactly suffering from an overabundance of recognizable names, just top to bottom in the roster. So when you have somebody who can show up, do something unexpected, I think he was the biggest underdog, at least on the main card, and then get people to kind of look their way for a minute, that's okay. I mean, that's something you can work with if you strike while the iron is hot and do something with them right away. I think that, yeah, they should absolutely take a look at that and not just be like, well, okay, the guy we wanted to win didn't win, so let's focus on getting him back into the good side of the column. I think, yeah, you ought to be smart here, and you can make something happen with Henry OK Corrales.
Next question this week comes to us from Frank Falco, which, that can't be a real name, right?
Is that like a 70s TV detective?
Yeah, Frank Falco's on the case. Dangerous, Falco. You're going to get us all killed.
The thing is, he plays by his own rules.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Frank Falco writes, speak on Jake Hager out here fighting a guy I'm pretty sure tossed me out of a local watering hole when I was 17. Can the WWE wrestler be a star for Bellator, or are y'all just some swagger haters?
Well, I've never been accused of being a swagger hater. I'm not about to start now.
Clearly a play on words with the nom de plume, the professional wrestling persona of Jake Hager, Jack Swagger.
Looks good getting off the bus.
He does look good getting off the bus.
Which, I mean, though that's been usually the case with pro wrestlers. I mean,
yeah.
CM Punk is kind of the exception to the rule as far as pro wrestlers coming into MMA. Looks the part.
He definitely does.
When you see him, when you saw him face to face with J.W. Kaiser here, who he fights, it does seem like, okay, when they're visually like in the same frame, I see what you're doing, Bellator. This is the other kind of Bellator matchmaking.
Was the guy's name TJ Kaiser?
JW Kaiser.
JW Kaiser was he was happy just to be there. This man was fired up in the lead up to this fight. I got dizzy as the Bellator camera tried to follow him in his jog around the cage. Then Jake Hager comes out there and does what a former All-American wrestler from the University of Oklahoma will do to you in a heavyweight MMA fight. Takes him down, drops a couple of elbows, eventually secures the arm triangle choke and gets the tap out. You were right that Jake Hager looks good getting off the bus. Looks pretty good in the interview portions too, I will say. You know, not necessarily known as like the best professional wrestler on the mic during his time with WWE, but like you see him at the post-fight press conference, he seems like a thoughtful guy, an articulate guy. Could he be something for Bellator, knowing that he's already 36 years old, which I saw someone say is 24 in heavyweight years?
Yeah.
But like, is anyone going to care about Jake Hager / Jack Swagger, Bellator MMA heavyweight?
Here's what I immediately started to think, especially him being in his mid-30s and all. Remember Bobby Lashley?
Everybody remembers Bobby Lashley.
I know you ain't forgot Bobby Lashley.
Current WWE superstar Bobby Lashley?
Remember when he first started out, and it was also the same thing where it was like, okay, heavyweight, looks good getting off the bus, has a wrestling background, so it's not like he's just trying to pick up all this stuff really quickly, like actually has a martial arts base to build off of and clearly a physical talent. And the thing he ran into, not unlike the Aaron Pico thing, was right away it was like people were going, okay, if you fight somebody of commensurate experience, it seems like a setup. It seems like we're trying to get you some wins. And then when you're kind of forced into fights with people who have been at this for a little while, you really just end up seeing how far you still have to go.
Yeah.
And for Bobby Lashley, like, it got him into kind of a situation where it didn't seem like there was a way for him to satisfy everybody at all the time. And when he'd lose a fight, it was like, well, okay, proof that Bobby Lashley is not going to be the next Brock Lesnar. Like, every single fight took on that huge importance. And I wonder, if it'll, especially with his age, I wonder if it'll be the same here. And at heavyweight, it's like, there are only so many bar bouncers you can beat up before you end up there, like with Frank Mir or something.
Yeah.
And you find out you still have a lot to learn.
Yeah, I think that, those are valid points. I would say, however, that I wonder if we're dealing with slightly different rules now. You know, Bobby Lashley really suffered from proximity to Brock Lesnar at the time because, you know, both guys, as we say, look good getting off the bus. They're both just giant humans. With sculpted physiques. And Brock Lesnar, who we have a question about coming up in listener mail, basically got off the bus and started kicking everybody's ass with a hiccup or two along the way, obviously. But he set the bar awfully high for an enormous chiseled professional wrestler crossing over to MMA with some wrestling background. So maybe Bobby Lashley got kind of unfairly branded with those same expectations. And also, I think at the time, like, we were still expecting Strikeforce, or MMA at the time, to sort of not play the boxing game of bringing up prospects and making them look good and padding their record with a bunch of wins. So, like, it was a hard situation, I think, for Bobby Lashley to be in. I wonder with Jake Hager if our expectations are slightly different, or at least, like, the expectations of the culture, so to speak, are different. As it pertains to like the Bellator heavyweight division, like, I don't know, you know, Jake Hager comes out, he gets this win. I don't know that we're necessarily expecting him to be like the best heavyweight in the world. So if Bellator were able to throw him three or four, you know, kind of gimme fights where at least the guy across the cage looked like he was going to be a physical, imposition to Jake Hager, I wonder if we would be more receptive to that than we were at the time of Bobby Lashley.
Are you saying maybe the MMA world is more open to just having some fun than it was back then?
I mean, I think a lot of the goalposts have been moved
since
then. Also, did you like how I said the time of Bobby Lashley? Like, he was a great warrior of the Middle Ages.
You know, I always liked the interviewing Bobby Lashley. He was a smart guy and fun guy to talk to.
And like super, one of the things about Bobby Lashley was he was super humble.
Yeah. They're and really like just like down to earth and like a regular person to talk
to. He was super like reasonable about his own abilities. Yeah. He didn't expect to be Brock Lesnar. So from Bobby Lashley's point of view, and I think Lashley was also training with Barnett. I think, and those guys up in Seattle for a while. And I think, like, because of that, Lashley was like, I've still got a lot to learn in the MMA world. So I don't expect Strikeforce to, like, throw me to the wolves. I'm trying to, like, take this slow and kind of build myself up. It always seemed like Bobby Lashley had a more reasonable view of Bobby Lashley's abilities than maybe the world around him did.
Yeah.
He also, like, suffered a serious knee injury when he was involved in a bank robbery. Like, he was in the bank.
Well, and don't say involved in a bank robbery. Like,
during the time of Bobby Lashley, we were all involved in bank robberies.
He was a customer in the bank when
he was trying
to
go to the bank to, like, put his paycheck in or whatever. And somebody comes in to rob the bank, and, like, they're waving guns around, and Bobby Lashley basically, like, hurt his knee diving for cover, it sounded like.
I thought he hurt his knee, like, trying to foil the bank robbery.
Maybe that was it.
It would be a better story that way.
Would be. Bobby Lashley, known in song and story, medieval warrior.
If I ever hurt my knee in a bank robbery, A, don't say I was involved in a bank robbery. B, tell them I did it while, like, knocking out a bunch of people, like, using, like, fake potted plants to knock out bank robbers. Not that I was, like, trying to dive out of the way, concerned for my own skin.
Next question this week comes to us from the Cheeseburger Walrus, our old pal. He writes, don't look now, but this weekend's a must-win fight for Ben's all-time capital G-U-Y guy, Damian Maia. Loser of three in a row, it appears he's getting a significant step down when he faces Lyman Good. Is the UFC giving Maia a quote-unquote gimme, or are they feeding him to Good in hopes of Lyman getting a big finish over a name opponent?
Well,
you feeling the heat over there on this one, folks?
Hey, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Damian Maia is not one of my guys. That's, I mean.
Well, yeah, everyone who has ever listened to this show before would know that you were a pants on fire liar at that point.
I will fully own my support for Damian Maia. Good dude, good martial artist, just all around somebody you feel good about supporting. But I would say, if this is the UFC's attempt to get into the Lyman Good business, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I would too.
Especially when, I mean, I agree that it is a step down from, like, the three-fight losing streak was Tyron Woodley, Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman, which, not too bad. It's not like you're saying Damian Maia sucks if he can't beat those guys. It's a tough three-fight schedule. But then especially when you're having your event in Fortaleza, Brazil, this does not seem to me like the one where you'd be like, all right, let's go have Maia get crushed so that we can finally catapult Lyman Good into the superstar status we've always been waiting for.
You sleeping on Lyman Good over there, Ben? Guy's 2-1 in the UFC.
Oh, he's not a bad fighter. And
former
he's
Bellator tournament winner.
He fought in the IFL, as a matter of fact, I believe. Yeah, I don't see this as somebody being like, all right, the Maia stock is plummeting. Let's dump it. Let's use him as a stepping stone, and Lyman Good's going to be the future. I don't see that was the thinking of the matchmakers here.
All right, next question this week comes to us from Jamie Winquist, and this is an interesting question. Jamie Winquist writes, so about that whole quote, when has it gone well pushing someone who is inexperienced? How about Brock Lesnar? Now, remember, we talked about this. Yeah. Was it last week on the show?
I believe so.
Brought up the pitfalls of pushing people who are inexperienced in MMA to a height that maybe they don't deserve or they haven't earned quite yet. We were talking about Greg Hardy, I think, in this specific instance there. Brock Lesnar, maybe the exception to the rule in that he became UFC heavyweight champion, was obviously the UFC's biggest pay-per-view draw for a hot minute there. I'm just going to kick it to you with this point-blank question. Brock Lesnar's MMA career, unqualified success, question mark?
For whom? For the UFC, yes, unqualified success. Like, brought big pay-per-view numbers, brought a lot of excitement. You can still drag him back up every once in a while and count on making a whole bunch of money on pay-per-view, which is remarkable to me. So, yeah, from that, like, if we're saying, when has it gone well for the promoter? Yeah, definitely went well there. I think now, though, as if we're just stepping back from a purely athletic standpoint and assessing him among MMA's heavyweights all time, his career does not look quite as good as it looked at the time.
Yeah, and also, even though he became UFC heavyweight champion, I would argue it was, in fact, a case of too much too soon for Brock Lesnar. possibly. Like, we can script out alternate realities where Brock Lesnar gets the opportunity to have 10 fights on the independent circuit in South Dakota and Minneapolis, Minnesota area, just beating up every agriculture salesman along I-90.
Well, hold on now. Frankly, I happen to know an agricultural futures investor out there who might give him...
there are numerous tough...
Might give him some trouble.
North, during the northern parts of the Middle West. You don't want to get yourself in a tiff with an agriculture salesman up there. Because you could run into Lesnar, you could run into Chris Tucherer, you could run into...
Cole Conrad's out there somewhere waiting to dump you on your head.
Yeah, be polite. Use your manners. But let's say Brock Lesnar gets 10 fights under his belt at the rodeo grounds before he shows up at the UFC. Might have been a different story.
Maybe, yeah. I think, though, the thing that we have known about Brock Lesnar and that we've learned throughout the many different facets of his athletic life is that he was never going to be the guy to get 10 fights before trying to make it big. He never had that patience for anything.
That's true.
The pro wrestling stuff, not with the NFL. They've tried to do the equivalent of that.
Right.
Like, hey, go play in the European League, you know, beat up some people in Minnesota, and then come back to us. And he was like, nope, ain't nobody got time for that. And I think the same thing was true with his MMA career. Everything was like, let me either do it really big right now or don't bother.
Last question this week. I feel like we're going to this question may not get the time that it deserves, but it's a long one. It's from Anders Berg, who writes, sitting here watching Bellator 214 and listening to Goldie reminds me how good the UFC commentary has been since he left. One of the best parts of the UFC broadcast is the analyst's ability to break down the action and not just rattle off certain phrases at different moments of the fight. On the other hand, I also listened to Scott Coker do a media scrum earlier this week, and I thought to myself, man, he comes off like a damn professional. Compared to Dana White, he doesn't seem completely allergic to telling the truth and can actually build up all the fighters in his promotion. Dana has a hard time building up people that he didn't plan to, example, Henry Cejudo. My question is, what would the UFC look like if Scott Coker was in charge of the show? Seems to me like Scott Coker has the professionalism to take the UFC frontman position to the next level. In recent years, the UFC has brought in USADA, Reebok, WME, upgraded commentators, and ESPN, all in the name of furthering the sport. Is it time for the boss man to be upgraded? What would the UFC look like without Dana? So this is a couple of interesting points. Number one, UFC commentary is, in fact, quite good right now, if you ask me. They got a lot of talented people in the broadcast booth. But the more interesting question, the question that I think we want to sink our fangs into here, Ben, what would the UFC look like with social media assassin Scotty Cokes running it?
Now, see, this is a good question. Also, I agree, though, with the point, except I think you don't get better on commentary by losing Jimmy Smith. But I do feel the same thing about one of the things that bothers me about Mike Goldberg is when you listen to him and he just seems like a human speaking spell.
It's like somebody created a Mike Goldberg soundboard years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And there are just those moments where they're just like somebody's pushing buttons and like just phrases are going to come out and they're not necessarily tied to anything that's happening. But I was thinking about this similar question when watching Scott Coker in the post-fight press conference here. And I was at first having a little fun with it because he was talking about Ryan Bader, who's asked, where do you rank Ryan Bader pound for pound after this win? He was like, I think he's top two or three. And you're like, well, come on. We're getting carried away. I understand everybody's excited. A lot of stuff just happened. But then you're like, okay, he is the promoter. We kind of forget that. Like when we get used to Dana White's style, his job is to try to put these guys over and try to get you excited about it and try to like build them up. We just kind of forget it because Dana White so often ends up doing the opposite. Or at least that's when he is at his most enthusiastic, it seems, is like when he is mad at somebody or yelling at somebody or trying to run somebody down. Like that's when he seems to be the most interested in what is going on. And so, yeah, it would be different. But also like Scott Coker, I guess the flip side of that coin is he doesn't have that same kind of like – manic energy, or I don't even want to call it charisma, but something where the UFC is clearly built around Dana White from like a media presence standpoint, like always including him in commercials and things like for the ESPN stuff. He was like front row center of those commercials and really trying to build around his big personality. And Scott Coker is a little bit more of the the quiet, keeping it reasonable type guy.
Yeah. I think Dana White, first of all, I think Dana White does a lot of stuff behind the scenes that we don't necessarily give him credit for in our day-to-day conversations about the sport. Just sort of like television production wise and in terms of logistics, I think he does a lot of things that don't necessarily make the headlines. He also clearly does a lot of things that do make headlines and not always for positive reasons. I think that he was the perfect guy for the UFC for a long time.
Yeah.
I think that the UFC for much of its life under the Fertittas needed a door-to-door knife salesman as the president, a guy who was going to come into your living room and tell you that he was going to show you the sharpest set of steak knives that you've ever seen and then cut a tin can in half at your kitchen table.
And who could go on talk shows and argue with people about it and would enjoy that.
Right. Somebody that wasn't going to back down for any reason and was just going to kind of make the most of every spotlight opportunity. Is it different now? I think you could argue yes.
I think it's different now, and I think he's different now. I don't think he is as into this as he was.
We watch
more UFC fights than Dana White does.
That's probably
true.
He
doesn't even go to all these.
It would only be human, would it not, if after this many years on the job and some $150 million richer or whatever it is, now getting, you know, 9% of the UFC's annual profits or whatever, almost as much as all of the fighters put together, if Dana White didn't have the same gusto that he had at first. You could understand if he looked at it and was kind of like, look at where we started, look where we are now. I almost feel like my work here is done. But at the same time, I don't know what else to do with myself besides go to Maine and ride motorcycles 100 miles an hour.
Yeah. No, you do get that sense. And also the sense that because he will look at how successful they've been, it's impossible to convince him of a need for any course corrections, however small or big, because, hey, look, obviously I'm a goddamn genius. I got us here to this point, so everybody can shut up.
Would it be a positive or a negative, I wonder, if Scott Coker were to somehow take over the UFC at this point? Because I think it's clear that if Scott Coker were the president of the UFC from 2001 to 2008, the UFC may not have gotten as big as it did. I don't know that it's necessarily a perfect comparison to say, look at what happened to Strikeforce, but like, I don't know. Strikeforce was around about that time, and the UFC obviously ended up ingesting Strikeforce whole cloth pretty much at the end of its lifespan. But like, at this point, the UFC kind of is what it is, in my opinion. I don't necessarily know if you're going to get a ton more mainstream saturation than what you already have. Although, this ESPN deal is probably the best chance that you have to increase your crossover appeal. If Scott Coker came over now, I can't really think of too many things that I feel like would clatter off the rails. Although maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not giving Dana White enough credit.
It's possible we wouldn't know it until we saw it. Like, we wouldn't know what essential piece we were missing. Until,
I mean, I will say this. On the other hand, just considering the UFC's schedule right now, that would be a lot of Scott Coker.
You would
get a lot of exposure to Scott Coker. And perhaps over the course of 42 events in 2019, his more understated, occasionally let me go back and watch the fights before I give you a quote style might wear a little thin. Yeah. I don't know.
Also, though, I'm saying, if you're the UFC and you're thinking about replacing Dana White as president and you don't go hire Brian Stann, the fuck is wrong with you, man?
All right, that's going to do it for listener mail this week. If you have a question, a comment, a concern that you would like to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. You go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. While you're there, go ahead and sign up for the Breakfast of Champions newsletter. That comes out every Friday morning to catch you up on the news and notes that we miss on all the days that we're not recording the podcast. Stuff always happens. News always breaks. The newsletter itself is short. It's informative. We would love to tell you it's funny. And if you don't like it, it's really easy to unsubscribe. Right now, though, we are going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Ben, there's a lot of big stuff happening with the Co-Main Event podcast right now. In fact, coming up next week, the first week in February, we're going to be kicking off some awesome stuff. We got the Road Agents Deadwood Rewatch podcast.
Road Agents.
For Patreons up at the top tier available at the Co-Main Event Podcast Patreon. We got the live chats, weekly live chats with you and me are going to kick off next week. That's for all levels of the Patreon tiers over at the Co-Main Event Podcast Patreon. What other stuff we got going? Give us a short rundown and tell the kids how they get down with the Co-Main Event Podcast Patreon.
Well, later this week for our top tier, we got the tips for the Well-Rounded Fight Fans newsletter coming out.
I got some good ones.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that right now.
I've been saving some up. That, of course, is where Chad and I, over across a range of different media type things, food, entertainment, music, television, literature, we offer our recommendations of things that we've been enjoying, things we think you might enjoy, straight from us to you. Also, we've got, you mentioned the live chats, the Road Agents Deadwood Rewatch podcast.
Road Agents.
Later on in February, February 22nd, don't forget about the Affliction Day of Reckoning drinking challenge.
February 22nd.
That's right. And Chad, I don't know if you noticed, we just passed into four digits with Patreon subscribers.
Went over 1,000 Patreon subscribers just today, I think.
That's right.
So we got to send a hearty thank you, a hearty pat on the back.
That's right.
To all the Patreons out there because they're keeping us in business.
And, of course, $5 and up patrons get to enjoy a whole other podcast each week, the Patreon Power Hour. That comes out on Fridays. So if you're sitting out there, you're thinking, man, I should join the team. I should really stop messing around and I should join the team.
It's getting a little Chris Weidman in here.
It is. You go to patreon.com/co-main event. There you can choose exactly what level you want to support us at. Plus, Chad, you keep us free and independent. You keep us out of the evil clutches of H.P. Laudmer III, a wealthy industrialist who, as I mentioned before, trying for a very aggressive takeover bid of the CME. First thing H.R. Laudmer III says he plans to do if he buys the CME podcast.
I shudder to even think.
Fetter the shit out of the discourse.
Oh, man.
And we pride ourselves on our unfettered discourse.
No more off-the-cuff and likely poorly reasoned discussions about what would happen if Scott Coker took over the UFC.
No. See? That is exactly the kind of speculative fiction you would be denied. Can't let that happen.
Go over to patreon.com/co-main event and jump on the train today, kids. Really excited about the Road Agents podcast, except that it's probably just going to be us saying, Road Agents.
Road Agents, you cocksucker.
Ben, that's some unfettered discourse right there, yeah, frankly.
You hooplehead.
Throw that on the end of that. 35 seconds is what it took to settle the final of the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix. Ryan Bader sends a shot right down the pipe. Just catches, I'm going to say, catches Fedor Emelianenko unawares. Because he was unawares, and then once the fight hit the canvas, he became a lot more unawares. Because Ryan Bader followed it up with another big shot. We step in and call things off. Ryan Bader, just as one guy who co-hosts the Co-Main Event podcast predicted, is your Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix champion.
Okay, but it's not like
you... And also the champ.
It's not like you predicted it because you were so high on Ryan Bader. It was a cynical prediction on your part.
I mean, you know I've always been a big Bader supporter.
You're Bader guy?
I've always been a big fan of Ryan Bader.
Yeah.
He's just an enormous human.
Okay.
In Ryan Bader.
In retrospect, it doesn't seem at all like that surprising, I guess, that Ryan Bader would be the guy to go through this thing. And yet, the way he did it, I do think we have to stop and appreciate. He polishes off Mola Wall in 15 seconds in the first round.
Yep.
Then he goes out there and, in Matt Mitrione's own words, rides him around like a pony for three rounds. And then goes out here, 35 seconds, takes out an aged but still legend of MMA in Fedor Emelianenko. And as people pointed out afterwards, I don't think he really even got hit. I don't think Ryan Bader took a significant strike in this tournament, which is remarkable.
Yeah, I thought you were just talking about the Fedor fight, and I was like, did Fedor even throw any strikes? But you're talking about the tournament.
Yes.
Did Ryan Bader get hit during this tournament?
Yes. Three fights, heavyweight Grand Prix. Did he ever get punched in the face?
well, we might need some statisticians to go run that back, because if Ryan Bader pitched a shutout for the entirety of the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix, that's some impressive shit right there.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about this afterwards, because everybody going to get really excited about Ryan Bader afterwards. You know, Scott Coker's going to say, I think he's top 2 or 3 pound for pound. And the natural impulse here of MMA fans is going to be, whoa, wait a minute. This was just Bellator, mind you. We already saw how Ryan Bader does against UFC caliber talent. Let's not confuse a guy walking around with shiny belts for being the best in the world or being the best in two different divisions, because look who he's up against. Which, to some extent, fair. I think if you put Ryan Bader in there against John Jones again, I think he gets crushed.
Yeah.
I think he gets crushed worse this time than he did the first time. I think John Jones is better this time. I think if you put him in there against Daniel Cormier, gets crushed. Alexander Gustafsson, probably crushed. And yet, I don't think that that should just automatically discount his accomplishments in Bellator or what he's doing now.
Well, no, if the bar that we've set is how would you do against John Jones, not very many people are going to fare too well yes. by comparison.
Right.
I mean, I feel like Ryan Bader is one of these dudes who has made the exact right career choice to come over to Bellator and look like $1 million and become the champ, win the heavyweight Grand Prix, and kind of like remind us all, oh yeah, like Ryan Bader is a pretty damn good fighter. And if not, perhaps for that kind of shocking loss to Tito Ortiz in his career, I feel like even if we don't consciously think about it, that loss to Tito Ortiz is still kind of fucking with us when we think about Ryan Bader. Like, we kind of think Ryan Bader can only be so good because, well, probably because we saw him fight so many times in the UFC, he became sort of a known commodity.
Right.
But I do think that that Tito Ortiz loss is like kicking around somewhere in the dark recesses of our mind brains, just kind of being like, but this guy lost to Tito, man. I mean, we could run it back
if we
wanted to.
We could run it back.
They're both over there in Bellator. We could run it back.
Well, and then there's the other part of the question, though, is for people who are looking at him and going, well, we saw him in the UFC, and now we're seeing him in Bellator. He's running through people in Bellator, but that really is just telling me about what the quality of competition is like in Bellator. For those people, there's nothing really he can do in Bellator that is going to change your mind about him, because there's just nobody over there who he hasn't already beaten, but who a win over them would be a dramatic shift
yeah.
for how you understand Ryan Bader.
Yeah, and that brings up perhaps the most interesting question here as far as the fallout from the heavyweight Grand Prix. What do you do with Ryan Bader now if you're Bellator? Because Chael Sonnen wants him to stop calling out bums, I saw over there on the internet.
Yeah.
So if you're Scotty Coakes and you just hit a towering home run with your Bellator heavyweight Grand Prix, which let's do it right now. Let's give Bellator some credit. When they kicked off this Grand Prix, I think we were a little bit taken aback by the timeline at first, but we were also sort of like, there's no way we get through this thing with all of the original competitors having taken part. As it turns out, Ryan Bader, a member of the original draw, and for the most part, an intact bracket, wins this thing. It's almost like Bellator pulled off the impossible in terms of a heavyweight tournament here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk in round two about the Bellator and where they stand and how the tournament and everything went. But you do come out of this with somebody that you can really use in Ryan Bader. And I like the idea of saying, we're going to let him at least try to defend both belts. It's not like there's a ton of business going on at heavyweight at Bellator anyway, so it seems like it ought to be kind of doable. And when you just take a step back and you're like, career-wise, like you said, for Ryan Bader, Bellator has proven to be a smart move.
Yeah.
He exited the UFC on a 2-fight winning streak, but then he goes over to Bellator, becomes champ immediately, defends it, goes into this heavyweight tournament, gets another belt. He's getting this closed payout of $150,000 just flat fee to show up and fight in these, it was that way for the first one in the tournament and the last one. The middle one was, I believe, in Uncasville, so he didn't get the payout numbers, but stands to reason, probably made the same there. So if you look at just like the last year of competition, that's some pretty good money for Ryan Bader. Plus, he's in Bellator, so he actually got to sell sponsorships on his shit rather than rolling up in there for like $15,000 worth of Reebok pay every time. So, you look at it and you're like, there's got to be some kind of middle of the pack UFC light heavyweights who are going, I think I could probably beat Ryan Bader. And instead, I'm over here hoping to end up as the main event of UFC Fight Night Allentown. Like, that's the best I can hope for kind of right now, when Ryan Bader's showing you a little different way to be.
Yeah, if we're here to make money, if the thing we're doing here is making money, which...
it better be one of the things you're trying to do.
That's what we're doing, right? It seems like Ryan Bader maybe made the right decision here. Heavy sigh. Let's talk about your guy, Fedor Emelianenko.
Okay.
Who loses in 35 seconds. He was talking a lot about retirement leading up to this fight. He's 42 years old. The nature of the punch that Ryan Bader landed on the feet to put Fedor Emelianenko down, not necessarily even the crushing blow on the ground that...
Yeah, where Fedor does the kind of Undertaker sit up right into a just clear cut, square on the face punch.
The punch that Ryan Bader landed on the feet was enough for me to look at it and say, this dude can't do it anymore because he doesn't have the reflexes and he can't fight like he's Fedor Emelianenko. And I feel like if he can't fight like he's Fedor Emelianenko, he can't do this anymore.
Right. It's the only way he knows how to be is to go. And honestly, a part of me gets a little bit excited at the beginning of a fight before anything has happened yet. When you just see him come out there and the posture, like the way he kind of presents himself and in his stance and the way he holds his hands and everything and he moves, you're like, oh yeah, Fedor. I still remember when it was like 2006 and you'd get excited about watching Fedor out there bouncing around on his toes, hands, you know, kind of out in front of him at his waist, a light just waiting to throw those killer shots. And yet then as soon as the action starts and you realize, oh yeah, you still fight that way.
Right.
The game done changed. Your body done changed. Opponents have done changed. It doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, you can't fight that way in 2019 if you're not prime Fedor Emelianenko.
Right.
Can we play the unfair game and the unanswerable question? If the best Ryan Bader and the best Fedor Emelianenko showed up to have this fight, I wonder what would happen.
Oh, wow. Okay, that is totally unfair. But, yeah, you wouldn't be able to talk me into believing that Ryan Bader of today beats Fedor Emelianenko of 2006.
I wouldn't be able to talk you into it?
Nope.
I mean, he's one of the best we've ever seen. Maybe the best we've ever seen. And so that's a fair position to hold. I just wonder that to the extent that the game has changed a little bit, the athletes are different. It would be a more competitive fight than the one we saw on Saturday night. Let's just say that. I want to read three honors that have been bestowed on Fedor Emelianenko during his career.
Okay. Ben.
First of all, in 2010, he was awarded to the first class Golden Order of the Romanov family of St. Nicholas.
All right.
In 2007, okay, he obtained first class order of Peter the Great.
Can you get the second class order? Like, does that exist?
He's a second class order, okay, for merit to the fatherland. Also awarded in 2007.
Okay.
I'm just saying he's got nothing else to prove, right?
I mean, when you have those, I assume, certificates in the trophy case, what else could you possibly want? What are the odds we actually get what I assume we both want, which is Fedor to call it quits here? Because this was the end of his Bellator contract, right, according to Scotty Cokes?
I mean, I think feel like chances are good, right? Like, the guy's already walked away once. You're giving me that look right now. You're looking askance over the tops of your glasses. I mean, we know that Ryzen's going to make a call.
See?
The phone's going to ring. I might instruct Fedor Emelianenko to take no calls during the next few months, because if Putin calls, that's probably not a good one. If Ryzen calls, that's probably not a good one. Just feel like he should take some time in Stario School, you know, organize the sledgehammer collection, stack all the tires up in the corner of the yard before we start taking calls.
Yeah. And then end up fighting Bob Sapp in Tokyo, New Year's Eve, 2019.
Well, that might be one he could win.
There you go.
Let's do Are You Fucking Kidding Me, Ben, and then we'll move on to round number two. Ben, mine is Bellator related.
Okay.
But your guy, Adel Al-Tamimi, won the curtain jerker out here at Bellator 214. Took out Brandon McMahon in a minute and 16 seconds via armbar. Then he showed up at the post-fight press conference talking about some of the celebrities he trains with. Chris Pratt, Wiz Khalifa.
Okay.
Complimentary of their skills. I don't want to get too mad at Adel Al-Tamimi because, you know, he's going to ride for his guys.
Yeah.
But when you tell me that Chris Pratt and Wiz Khalifa could be quote-unquote quality pro fighters, I have to say, are you fucking kidding me? Because we just watched goddamn Greg Hardy try to have a fight in the UFC, a guy who was an NFL All-Pro and, by all accounts, one of the best athletes in the National Football League, and he still looks like he should be out at the county fairgrounds. So are you fucking kidding me? Don't tell me that the dude from Parks and Rec is going to roll up in here and be a quality pro fighter.
You fucking kidding me?
You fucking kidding me?
Chad, I know you must have been keeping an eye on what your dude Max Holloway was doing in Ireland.
It's going to be my just saying stuff.
Okay.
But let's roll it out now.
Well, he goes over there. He's touring the Jameson Distillery. He's at Croke Park.
I love everything about what Max Holloway did in Ireland.
Absolutely everything about it. Especially, you know, I love him just extolling the virtues of Jameson whiskey. And this is not somebody who seems like he's a big whiskey fan, probably. Never mentions Conor McGregor or Proper 12. Just talking about how great Jameson whiskey is. And this picture, Chad.
Is that the picture of him looking at the ledger? Like this is the first chapter of a young adult novel?
Yes.
And Max Holloway is about to be whisked away to a magical land where he's going to meet some tigers that speak English and he's going to have a magical adventure and save the kingdom?
The giant ass ledger, the little ink pot with the pen resting in it. It looks like he is a maester in training at the Citadel in Game of Thrones. Are you fucking kidding me? That is awesome.
Let me just read from the tweet too, right? The tweet about Jameson. He refers to it as 238 years of innovation, hard work, and unmatched quality. Not a watered down trend,
he says.
I'm sure apropos of nothing and no one.
Just, you know, a guy enjoying the product that Jameson Whiskey puts out.
He knows what he's doing.
Fucking kidding me?
You fucking kidding me? That's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two. Ben, we've talked before on the podcast about our mutual friend Tyler.
Yes.
Big time MMA fan back in the day. Professional guy. Some disposable income at his disposal.
Used to show out on the flag football team while wearing a pair of Tito Ortiz flame shorts. Not all weather, which I really appreciated.
He's the kind of guy that if you were the UFC, you would want him in your corner.
Yeah.
Because he's going to buy your pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. Here's a text that I got from Tyler. Saturday, 3:35 p.m.
Okay.
He writes, "It has come to my attention that Fedor is fighting Bader tonight in the finals of some sort of tournament on a card that also includes Jack Swagger. What's more, I can watch the entire thing free of charge on my TV set. How does the UFC stay in business?" So if you wanted to take the temperature of the casual guy who at one time was a big-time MMA fan.
But also the casual guy who's now like 40. Like. Yeah. That's important to note because to him, Fedor versus Bader still means something.
I was going to ask you to open this round. What do you make of that text? Does that sentiment mean anything to you? Is Tyler's sentiment, even though it is purely anecdotal, does it mean something larger?
Yeah, it does. My answer to him, though, would be that Bellator can only do this a couple times a year. They can only come up with a offering like this a few times a year. That this is not Bellator, like, you know, what's Bellator doing for its next show, February 9th, Newcastle upon Tyne? A Pitbull brother. We're back to a Pitbull brother, the guy from whatever the British version of the Jersey Shore is. He's on that, like, stuff like that. To use Scotty Coke's own terminology, they just don't have enough bullets in the gun, at least right now, to keep this up at a really regular pace. And how does the UFC stay in business? It has more bullets in the gun.
I would argue that it has the three letters. Well, I think that's the most important thing at this point. Because, yeah, the UFC has a lot of bullets in the gun, but what's the next UFC main event coming up this weekend? Rafael Assuncao versus Marlon Moraes. A fight that, if it was the Bellator main event over there in Newcastle, I'm not sure that I would...
I mean, it's going to be a good fight, but I understand what you're saying as far as name recognition. But also, like, the way... you're right that the UFC's brand recognition is a big part of the success, like, going way, way back. And the exposure that it gets connected to that, I mean, being on ESPN and having that to help you out, that's going to be nice going forward here. But also, like, if you care about what's actually going on in mixed martial arts now, and granted, you got to be paying kind of close attention to even follow it up to know, like, who matters now rather than just, like, who used to matter. But, you know, Bobby Knuckles versus Kelvin Gastelum is the kind of fight of, like, who is good now,
yeah,
rather than just who do you remember from a nostalgic period in your life.
All right, so here's what's going on with Bellator right now. We just wrapped up the heavyweight Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. Ryan Bader is your champ. We're about to kick off the welterweight Grand Prix here in the coming months. Scott Coker appears to have decided to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of his public persona, his social media persona I'm thinking of specifically. Do you think that, and I feel like this is a conversation that maybe we have over and over again, but, like, does the successful completion of the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix, coupled with a slightly different landscape in MMA, coupled with the UFC doing this thing on ESPN, which we still don't necessarily know if it is going to be a huge success or, you know, not, is what's the state of, if you had to give the state of the union for Bellator, where are we at?
I think we are at a moment of increasing opportunity. But I also think that when you look at stuff like what's going on with the DAZN streaming service and the possibility that we might be just moving away from TV entirely, if you're Bellator, that's also another thing to consider. But it does seem like what we said in the past, that Bellator has to not try to go super big and knock the UFC off that first place perch.
Right.
What Bellator had to do, we said, was hang around.
Just be around. Doing solid stuff.
Not fuck up, not go out of business, not completely self-destruct, hang around, wait for the UFC to make a series of stumbles, and then therefore you going at your slow and steady pace are gradually closing the distance.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's kind of what we're doing here. And you look, Bellator does have some good stuff coming up. And, you know, with the UFC trying to transition people over to watching stuff on ESPN Plus, maybe you see that as an opportunity. Like, maybe not everybody's going to make the jump for all of those. I don't know. It does seem like you have some small openings if you're Bellator.
Yeah.
But it also seems like you're not exactly going to sprint to try to catch the UFC anytime soon.
Yeah, it's an interesting moment for Bellator because I feel like if you were able to give me a glimpse into the future and you told me that, you know, Bellator surpassed the UFC and that Scott Coker was able to write a check and buy the UFC at some point, I would be like, okay, I'm surprised by that, but I find it believable. And then if you told me, well, in 2019, Bellator lost the Paramount Network and it just went out of business, I would also be like, okay, I'm surprised by that, but I believe it. It sounds possible. If you were Scotty Coker, what's the end game? Are you thinking about an end game, or are you worried about survival on a day-to-day basis, or are you thinking what is the perfect end game here? If I was a genie, if Scotty Coker rubbed a lamp and got one wish from a genie, is the perfect scenario to one day get so big and powerful that you can buy the UFC, which I think in an MMA world now with the absence of the Fertittas is like a more realistic possibility than ever, as long as you could somehow get the money? Or is the end game like just kind of be Bellator and hope that that the UFC fails somehow?
Well, see, here's what I wonder. If you're imagining a scenario where you're Bellator and you're buying the UFC.
Well, you're Scott Coker, you know?
Okay.
You close your eyes at night.
Okay.
What are you thinking about?
But what I'm saying is, in all the likely scenarios where the UFC either tanks so hard that Bellator just wakes up as first place by the virtue of the UFC's own failures, or the UFC tanks so hard that its price is cheap enough that Bellator can just buy it, either one of those scenarios is probably bad for the sport as a whole. Well, like, yeah. It probably means, like, the sport has taken a downward turn, not just the UFC.
Yeah.
Because if we've seen anything, it's that the UFC has a resilient enough product that it can fuck with its fans, it can dick over its fighters, and it can still be fine.
To a certain extent, yeah, but I wonder how much the new ownership group changes that. Like, the Fertittas were kind of willing to stick it out through thick and thin for a long time. But, like, let's say that the ESPN thing is a disaster and it just doesn't work and pay-per-view numbers tank and you lose some of your top draws for various reasons. Like, do you think that WME IMG is okay with that, like, over 3, 4, 5 years? Or do they get to a point where they're like, look, this thing's not the juggernaut that we thought we could turn it into. We need to get some of our money back and sell this thing.
Maybe, but I mean, they already put a ton of money in it just to get it.
That's true.
I would think that you'd have a really strong motivation to try to make it work.
I just feel like they could get themselves into a tough spot if things don't go right.
That's true, but
not that they necessarily care, because we're talking, again, like, they've got all the money.
It's hard for me to imagine a scenario where all that happens and Bellator is still being like, hey, we're fine. Everything's been going great over here. But who knows? I mean, I don't know. If I'm Scotty Coker and I'm sitting there, I would think Scott Coker's the kind of guy, even when he's rubbing the genie's lamp in his head, he's being super reasonable about it. Like, he's not going,
he's
like
thinking, like, maybe a new Taurus.
Yeah. He's not the guy being like, all right, how do I end up as king of the universe? He's like, how do I get to be city council president? Like, that's an attainable goal. I think what he probably imagines as a good case scenario playing out is the Bellator starts to pick up more and more free agents. People, like, gradually the mindset changes both among fighters and then maybe as a consequence among fans, where people stop being like, Bellator is the place you go when you can't hack it in the UFC. But people see a guy like Ryan Bader doing well and they're like, hey, maybe that's something to consider. And gradually you start to siphon off some talent. Now you have more bullets in the gun. You can do more fun stuff and people just start paying more attention. I think that that's probably the scenario he envisions.
Do you think that the Grand Prix represents any kind of signpost, or do we just, like, kind of backtrack into business as usual for Bellator and we all kind of forget about it and go on?
Well, we're moving right into the welterweight tournament, right? So, like, I think that Bellator has correctly seen that as, here is a niche that the UFC won't fill. The UFC won't do the tournament stuff. It's just scared of, like, you know, tying up a division that way, and has had bad experiences when it has even tried to do small tournaments. And so here's the thing you can do. People get excited about it. It's a really reliable and kind of cheap way to generate some interest. If you take 8 fighters we don't care about and just mix them up and have them in a series of fights, we still don't care about them. You take 8 fighters we don't care about and you put them in a tournament, as PFL has shown us, you can get something out of that. And so I think that stuff like that is smart. And especially when you get through, if you get through the heavyweight tournament, heavyweights, a bunch of middle-aged heavyweights too, you got it done in a year and you got all the original entrants, you know, you didn't have to turn to alternates, and you got a champ out of it, who was on the younger side from the guys you have in the pool, you got to think to yourself, all right, this proves it can be done.
Oh, I agree with you. Anything is possible now that you've pulled off a heavyweight grand
prix. Yeah.
That's going to do it for round number 2. We'll be right back with round number 3. Ben, we get our second taste of the UFC on ESPN Plus coming up this weekend, live from Fortaleza, Brazil, down there at the Centro de Formaso Olímpica de Nordeste.
Granddaddy of them all.
As we said earlier in the show, headlined by Rafael Assunção versus Marlon Moraes. You also got Jose Aldo versus Renato Moicano on the card. Your guy Damian Maia against Lyman Good. Charles Oliveira against David Tamer. And, you know, a bunch of other stuff.
Johnny Walker. Light heavyweight prospect Johnny Walker, who is somehow Brazilian.
Yep, that's true. He is somehow Brazilian.
It's Justin Lede.
You got a Nurmagomedov on this card?
You do? Oh, yeah. How about way down there?
Saeed Nurmagomedov.
And you also got a Magomed, yeah.
Right on there. So some stuff for the hardcores, I guess. Given that this is our second chance to see the UFC on the streaming service, Ben, what are you going to be looking for? And when it comes to UFC on ESPN Plus 2?
Well, and this one will be a chance to see an entire event just on the streaming service.
That's right. The prelims for this one, not on the television. They're going to be on the internet. ESPN Plus for that as well.
Yeah, and you got, what, like a 13-fight card here? Now, see, this is exactly the kind of event that would have been an absolute labor under the Fox Sports 1 era.
Yeah.
Like, you could just see how it's going to go, where, like, you know, you'd get through the prelims, like, and then you'd get to the 6-fight main card, and you're looking at 3.5 hours of just a bunch of filler and farmers only and all kinds of bullshit, and you would just have to sit through it and just take it in order to get the good stuff at the very end when it's like 11:30 at night. Here, since I'm paying you for your damn streaming service, here's where I want to see that change. And it seems like maybe there's some hope that we will see it improve a little bit. Because remember these kinds of events when they were on Fight Pass? You know, for one thing, it would probably be on like on a Sunday morning from like somewhere in Eastern Europe or something. But fine, like I'm not hating on that at all. And we'd get through at a brisk pace. So that's what I'm looking for here is, like, are you going to respect my time and give me the fights and not waste my time with a bunch of other bullshit since I am fucking paying you?
Yeah. There are those lingering questions in our mind about the honeymoon period between the UFC and ESPN and the fans, because they did something similar with the dawn of Fight Pass. You know, they gave us a good fight in the main event just to get us hooked. And then as things went forward, especially as the Fox deal started to become a little bit long in the tooth, it felt like things started to slow down a little bit. It felt like we didn't get the star-studded cards. It felt like we were out here, you know, for lack of a better reason, just to sell advertising. And the time, the clock itself, would creep up on past midnight, even here in the one true time zone.
Yeah.
So all of those were concerns as we move over to ESPN to see how they would handle that. And yeah, now that we get into the second and then third and fourth ESPN Plus cards coming up over the next month or so, it is going to be interesting as we get a slightly better feel for how things are actually going to play over on ESPN. Also, I wonder if this card gets any kind of significant push from the worldwide leader, or if, you know, they were kind of there for Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw, and a lot of this stuff they're just going to kind of let you know, filter down into the streaming service alone.
Well, yeah, you know, after that first event, we got a bunch of emails crowing about the numbers from ESPN, right? Like saying, like, oh, we got like 500,000 new signups, and all these people signed up just on Saturday. You know, clearly motivated by seeing the UFC on the streaming service. And now you get kind of a drop off, at least in terms of like broad name recognition on the card for this one. You start going back to like a similar UFC formula, going to Fortaleza, Brazil, going to have a bunch of Brazilians on the card and, you know, a card that is decent, but not exactly eye popping. And will ESPN be like, okay, we're still super invested in finding out how this goes and exactly how many new subscribers we get and all that stuff? Or will they be like, well, now we're just settling into autopilot? That's what I'll be interested to see.
Yeah, and then in terms of the actual fight at the top of the card, kind of weird times at bantamweight, I guess you could say, because Henry Cejudo surprised us all and made quick work of TJ Dillashaw in their last fight. And so obviously we don't know the future of TJ Dillashaw at 135 pounds. We don't know if he's going to go right back up and start defending the title against number one contenders. We don't know if Henry Cejudo might go up to 135. We just don't know exactly what's going to happen around the title there. So Rafael Assunção and Marlon Moraes, which is a rematch of a fight they had back at UFC 212 in June of 2017. Obviously, you're probably your best candidates to claim number one contender status in the men's 135-pound division. I think Sun Sal's on a 4-fight win streak. Moraes, I think, is on a 3-fight win streak. A couple of serious contenders, even though maybe they're both a little bit lower profile. What's your best guess here for what becomes of the winner of this fight? Do they have a chance to tumble ass over tea kettle into a championship fight, or are we still got business with Henry Cejudo that we got to work out?
I mean, in a just world, the winner of this fight fights for the title next,
right?
Like, I don't see how you get around that. And yet, the way it seems like it's probably going to work out, especially with the way the UFC seems to love TJ Dillashaw and seem to want to give TJ Dillashaw everything he wants, it seems like you're probably going to see a rematch there between Dillashaw and Cejudo next. So, I don't know. If you're the winner of this fight, do you just try to stay patient and tell yourself your time's going to come? Or do you let them talk you into taking on somebody else? Because afterwards, you know, don't you have Aljamain Sterling and who's he fighting? And Jimmy Rivera? And, you know, they both have the losses recently to Marlon Moraes, but, like, you've got to think those guys are also going, hey, this fight is to help determine the pecking order. Maybe the winner here gets to challenge the winner of that one if the bantamweight title picture is taking too long. I don't know. It does make it difficult for you if you're trying to promote this fight and try to tell people what they're fighting for. It would be nice if you could say, hey, this is the main event because it's establishing a number one contender. But right now, it's tough to really say and believe that.
And both Rafael Assuncao and Marlon Moraes are guys who have been waiting for a while. Especially Assuncao.
Assuncao in particular.
Because he's been sort of like the best fighter at 135 pounds that like no one will give any credit for a long time. Marlon Moraes, of course, came over from other organizations and has sort of established himself relatively quickly as a top 135-pound fighter. What do we make of Jose Aldo here, Ben? There's been some publicity around the fact that he didn't want to go 5 rounds, so he's not the main event. He himself has come out and said he wants to fight a few times this year in Brazil and then call it quits. Guy's only 32 years old, but at the same time, a lot of miles on the tires of Jose Aldo there, the one-time standard bearer at 145 pounds. Now, we have known from experience that you can't always take Jose Aldo's declarations to the bank.
Right. But often mistranslated, it seems, when he doesn't like the way something comes out in the media.
Is this truly the last act for Jose Aldo in what was, you know, aside from that loss to Conor McGregor, an otherwise fabulous UFC career?
I'll believe it when I see it. I think, yeah, Jose Aldo is one of those people who is known to make some big statements and then walk back from them afterwards, depending on how it goes. So, yeah, he also has claimed that he wasn't the one who had a problem with fighting 5 rounds, that basically, you know, cooler heads prevailed in his team and told him, like, yeah, you don't want to do more work for the same amount of money, so take the co-main event spot. I don't know. You wouldn't be, you know, fighting Renato Moicano is a tough fight. If he goes out there, though, and he knocks him out or something, I could see Jose Aldo deciding he's reborn in the game and he's coming after that title or something. Can't you? I mean, I could envision almost any about face at any time from
him. Yeah, yeah. We've learned through experience that things are often fluid.
Yeah.
Over there for Jose Aldo. All right, you got anything else you want to add about this? Are you ready to do Just Saying Stuff and then get out of here?
Sure.
All right, let's do Just Saying Stuff, Ben. What is your Just Saying Stuff for this week?
Well, this one's a little bit off the beaten path, so I'm going to need you to bear with me.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I keep seeing this ad, and I've seen it like on MMA websites and on like social media around like MMA pages and stuff, and it's for like some kind of like pseudo-inspirational group trying to get just regular people to stop drinking, at least for a while.
Okay.
And, you know, some of it for like, you know, stop drinking for a year or take like 3 months off with like no drinking and your life improves. And it's all these people talking about how much better their lives got and when they weren't having a drink. And the image I keep seeing on all these sites and everything showing up is like this guy, and he's like at like a beach resort, and he's like, and it's like, oh, my life changed so much after I just like stopped drinking, even just like recreationally after work and stuff like that. And he's standing there at the beach resort. And I realize this says more about me than about them. But the first thing my brain thought when I saw it was, so you're telling me I could change my life and go to the beach resort, but then I couldn't get hammered when I got there? The fuck is the point of that? I'm just saying.
Just saying. Telling on yourself over there.
So I would change my life and it would be awesome. And then I'd be like, yeah, I want to celebrate. Let's go get drunk. Oh, wait, I can't. Because I changed my stupid life. Thanks a lot.
Just saying. Wow.
Just saying.
Well, Ben, you know when we talked about the fallout from the Alexander Hernandez loss to Donald Cerrone?
Yeah.
We said he was taking it pretty well, kind of showing maturity that mm-hmm. we didn't expect from him.
Okay. I assume this is just going to keep going in that direction.
He's had some time to think about it.
Oh, God.
Now.
Oh, no.
And I'm not saying he's gone totally off the rails here, but some of these comments on the recent MMA Junkie story here from Steven Morocco kind of made me think, okay, well, he's got some distance from it now. He started telling himself some different things. Here's Alexander Hernandez talking to MMA Junkie Radio. A rematch would be extraordinary. That would be so expletive sweet. I assume he said so fucking sweet. I don't know. If it does, beautiful. If it doesn't, I understand why it wouldn't. Either way, it's a learning lesson. And if it wasn't this one, it would have been the next one because the approach that I had has to change. Then he talks about Cowboy Cerrone. I could see him starting to question things, question himself. And instead of sitting back and being patient, I had this idea in my head that I had to get the next one. Where I pressed, he was patient. I pressed to my demise. I gave him shots. I was forcing shots that weren't there instead of picking the ones that were readily available if I played a smarter game. I started exposing myself to shots, giving shots, letting that clinch game open. To my own demise, I fell on my own sword.
Huh. Okay.
So I guess I'm just saying, Ben, maybe Alexander Hernandez not quite taking it with the kind of class that maybe we thought at first, or maybe he started to kind of tell himself a different story.
Yeah, we all tell ourselves the stories we need to in order to get through, you know?
I'm just saying.
Just saying.
That is going to do it for your Co-Main Event podcast this week. We will be back next week. We will tell you all the stuff that happens at UFC on ESPN Plus 2. Should we just start calling these things ESPN or UFC Fight Nights? Because this is UFC Fight Night 144.
Yeah, there you go.
We might even look ahead to UFC 234 coming up on February 10th.
Well, and of course, we'll have the Patreon Power Hour coming later this week.
That comes Friday. I'm thinking the time could be right for a deep dive into the career of Fedor Emelianenko.
Oh, no.
Not that I want to start telling tales out of school,
boy.
But this might be our last chance to do it.
You want to be sad? You want to get sad?
I'm always sad when we do the power.
Oh, okay.
As for right now, though, we're done. We are through. We are out.
I guess the question is, how deep do you want that dive to get?
As deep as we can go. You want to explore the whole world of Fedor Emelianenko.
Well, now
the highest highs, the lowest lows.
Sounds like the perfect opportunity to roll out my theory, Matt Lindland was robbed.
He did grab the ropes.
Grab the shit out of the ropes.
He did grab the shit out of those ropes.
He doesn't grab the shit out of those ropes. Matt Lindland destroys the Fedor aura with one well-timed suplex.
He doesn't grab those ropes. We're sitting here taking a deep dive into the career of Matt Lindland.
Yeah, the story career.